Welcome to the Photo Field Notes podcast. This episode is brought to you in part by Musea Gathering, which is a free virtual conference that's coming up on February 22nd and 23rd of 2021. The speakers have worked with companies like Tiffany & Co., American Express, Lexus, New York Times, National Geographic, Martha Stewart Weddings, Time Magazine, Travel and Leisure Magazine, and more. And they've been featured in Vogue, Harper's Bazaar, Lens Culture, and New York Times Magazine, along with others. You can get your free ticket at museagathering.com/fieldnotes and support this show. So that's M-U-S-E-A gathering.com/fieldnotes. This is Ali Ciardo, and today I'm talking with Sarah Petty, who is a very successful portrait photographer, runs her own studio, beautiful studio, by the way, and also helps other photographers learn how to run their own boutique studios in a successful way. And so, Sarah, I'm going to let you tell your own story. You have so many great kind of nuggets in your history and your lessons learned. So why don't we start there? Start with the beginning of your photography career, how you got into it, and then lead me through that journey to where you are now.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Allie. I love your podcast, and I think you're doing a big service to the industry right now, which is what I think the industry needs. So thank you for doing all of this.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't set out to become a photographer. I wanted to be a marketing director at an advertising agency. That was my dream job. So I got my undergrad in business. I got a job at Coca-Cola, and all of the ads said, we need a master's degree, right? So I started on that journey working on it, and I just started doing photography for fun. And my now husband, who was my boyfriend then, had all these nieces and nephews started shooting, and they started referring me. And I was like, oh, just pay my costs. This was film. And I started getting really booked, kind of making a long story short, but I got pregnant with twins. We'd had some miscarriage, really painful experience, but I wanted to be a great mom. And so I was doing this photography on the side. I was working all the time. I'd gotten my MBA and gotten that dream job at the ad agency, but I was working all the time. And so I thought, gosh, I wonder if I could just make a little money. I mean, I love marketing. I love business. My parents were entrepreneurs, and I thought, this can't be that hard. Little did I know, right, that literally a business degree and a master's degree in business do not teach you how to run a business. They teach you how to go work for a company like Coca-Cola. And so it was sort of like a little false confidence. But then on the other hand, I didn't have any photography training. So I really had that imposter syndrome where I just felt like a fraud. I thought, I'm not worth charging because I don't even know what I'm doing. I'm just running around chasing kids at the park. So after my kids were born, I had a list. I'd been in bed rest. I had this list of people waiting for me to photograph them. And I thought, well, gosh, what if I actually tried to do this? So I got a little studio, and I was getting referred, and I was working all the time. And I kind of had what we call now kind of that shoot and burn model, which I am personally not a fan of, because, you know, you make a couple hundred bucks on a shoot, which I was making 75 and my costs were 65. So that's not hard math. Don't need a big degree to calculate how fast you're not making money there. But I wanted to be that hands-on mom. And so I kind of got to that point where I was like, I can't do this. I'm not making any money with this sort of shoot and burn model. And I had that moment. I remember it when I was holding my newborn baby twins. And I was like, I'm going to work away the next 15 years of their lives. And I'm not going to do that. So I either need to figure it out or go get a job. Like, at least with a job, I'd have a little money, because right now I have no money and no time. And I think probably a lot of people can relate to that, because we think that's what we should do, right? Be affordable to everyone, be this service provider, and then we don't think we're good enough. And I still have that. I have this beautiful studio, and I still feel like I'm kind of a fraud. Like, I don't know. I'm not trained. I see these great photographers, I get this insecurity. But at the end of the day, I remind myself, like, I didn't have photos of me as a child. Nobody had them. Nobody printed them. Nobody framed them. I was a second kid. I have awesome parents. But I know that I'm doing my clients a service by charging them and selling them big, beautiful artwork. And so I started just investing in myself. There wasn't someone who taught. Like, that's what we do now. We teach photographers how to do this. But there was nobody. It was kind of the internet was a baby. And I would travel and I'd study with this, like, famous photographer, only to find out they were a great photographer but couldn't teach me how to make money. And so a lot of trial and error. I'd come home, I'd put it together, you know, eating macaroni and cheese, being broke. things would break. I would fix the system. I would do it again, study, learn something else, fix the system for years until I got some traction. So that's kind of the long story short. But after I had those babies, I was thinking, okay, I can't have the studio in my basement. We had like 7-foot ceilings, so I had to have everybody on the ground to shoot them. So I got this little cheap studio. It was $300 a month, had bars on the windows, painted it, got it all fixed up, had a grand opening for my first studio on August 30th, 2001, 2 weeks before 9/11. And I'm sharing this because I didn't know any different. Like, I've only built my business in kind of not a great economy. And then 2008, 2009, when, you know, the housing market crashed and everybody was freaking out. I mean, I just kept forging ahead, just taking care of my business, controlling what I could control, because in my heart, I know that no matter what economy it is, people are buying things, they're spending money, they want to feel better, right? So they're buying things to make them feel better, which is what we do, not necessarily the things that they need. And so here we are talking kind of almost a year in to this pandemic. And while we didn't know last year what was at us, right, what was coming, we do now. Right. And I love the quote. I think it's a Chinese proverb, something about when the wind comes, you can hide from the wind or you can build a windmill. And that's what I try to just bring hardcore to my community and my students and everybody in this industry is, you know, we're sort of sea captains. There are going to be rough storms. There are going to be rough patches. If you don't learn how to navigate those, then just don't get on the boat. Don't go on the sea. Let's stay and let's build our windmill, right?
Yeah. Well, let's get right into that because we were chatting a little bit before this started. And I was talking about how when I was recording podcast episodes last spring, I record my episodes anywhere from a few weeks before they go live to sometimes months before they go live. And I remember saying, should we even talk about the coronavirus? Because, you know, maybe by the time this thing goes live, it's not even going to be a thing. We shouldn't even worry about it. And so clearly, here we are. We know it's a thing. We know it's affecting us at least for a little while, right? Like, it's not going to be gone in a week or a month or a couple of months. We've got a little ways out of here. So talk to me a little bit about how you have gotten through this, you know, shifted your business, built this windmill to make it work for yourself in this crazy, crazy time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think it starts with the mindset of, oh my gosh, surely we'll be out of this in 2 months and then I can go. It's sort of like, it doesn't matter. I mean, we want it to be over sooner, but we can't wait for that. We can't do the if then story that we tell ourselves. So I come at it from the mindset of it doesn't matter. And one of the things we did for our students right away, because we had some students, like we have students all over the world, and some were like, Sarah, my city's shut down. My children have, you know, they're immunocompromised. I hope I'm saying that right. But I just can't go out. I can't do anything. So we created this campaign called Snap Happy. This is just one small example of a mindset, right? It was called Snap Happy, where they could teach online classes for parents for their kids who got, you know, dumped on us here, homeschool on your one computer that you have, but showing them just basic lines, shape, different compositions, and making money from home, just teaching little iPhone classes, giving the kids little adventures around the house. And it's just cash flow, right? It's just a way to make money. It's not a whole business. It's not changing what you're doing. It's just making money. And also other things that we did to navigate. That was the first thing, right? Like, okay, let's just take a breath. And here's how you can make money without leaving home to start. And then we looked at being a little more stealth about it. You know, it was interesting too with people all over the world because we only know our community, but we have people in massively impacted cities to cities who are like, oh, there's a pandemic. And so we really were able to coach people through looking at what's safe for you and what you're comfortable with, but not blasting it out on social media, right? Because you're going to get socially sort of beat up for that. But there are people who are like, oh my gosh, my kids are home from college. We're all healthy and safe. We can shoot outside. We haven't had a family portrait in years. Let's do it. Or photographing pets. We just put together a really cool Pooch Playoffs, a campaign for our students to do during March Madness, right? It's a whole bracket. And we have a national competition because pets are, you know, a little safer. People could even drop their pet off and pick their pet back up, meeting them at the park. So it's looking at how can we work within the parameters that we're given. And maybe they're not our favorite things. I'm fine with that. Like, I love photographing babies and kids. Three kids under five, I'm giddy. And my least favorite is like the family of 30 people. but if that's what I have to do to pay bills, that's what I'll do, right? I'll do those sessions. So we have to be a little less picky and sort of say, hey, if this is going to pay bills right now, let's pay bills.
Those are great ideas. I live in Michigan right now, at least currently, you're not even allowed to have studio sessions. They're not allowed. I'm not even sure if outdoor sessions are allowed. I've been turning down business just like, you had to say no. But I love the idea of, you know, teaching the virtual classes. And if you're interested, listeners, in learning more about photographing pets, I just did an episode that just published. I think it was on January 13th with Nicole Bagley, who's from Hair of the Dog Academy, who teaches about photographing pets. So that's a really great route to go to just get creative. And, you know, these are great ideas beyond just saying, well, I guess I can't do anything. So I think I love your energy, the energy that you bring to it. So with all of this, let's get into, you know, whether we're marketing something brand new that we've never done before, like photographing the pets or doing the classes, or if we're just kind of like still able to find some kind of regular something, depending on where we are. Let's talk a little bit about getting the word out to people, because I think that so many of us feel this pressure that we have to be social media stars, these rock stars. And I have made, you know, no secret about the fact that I am not a fan of Instagram. I do it because I know it's like a portfolio that people will scroll through my pictures to get a quick look. And I've gotten some leads there, but for the number of leads that I get, way more of them are not coming from any kind of social media. So Sarah, you said, you know, social media is not your big place for finding clients. And I think for some people, that's going to be great news to hear, because some of us, like me, we're like, ugh, I don't want to put these little videos together every day and post these perfect pictures and perfectly style every single thing, every single day. So let's talk about some of your go-to simple ways to find your perfect clients who, in your case specifically, are interested not just in digital files, but also in purchasing these beautiful pieces of artwork for their homes.
Yeah, yeah, we definitely share that. I could live life without social media. But let me just take one small step back in this, because marketing is the thing, right? Everybody wants marketing. Just Sarah, just tell me, like, how do I get more clients? And I always say that same thing. Like, let's take a quick step back, because there are a lot of ways to market. And I love marketing. I love, like, that's my company, Joy of Marketing. It's what I eat, sleep, and breathe. But there's not one simple, easy answer. But here's the thing. I find that, and I love the education you put out there. I love that education. There's so much education out there. But I think sometimes for photographers, it's like they're taking different pieces of puzzles from different puzzles, right? And then they go home and they're trying to put all these pieces together and they don't have that picture on the puzzle box. So the puzzle box for me in my business is very boutique. That's what I do in my studio. That's what I teach. That is the puzzle. So like in my puzzle box, social media isn't really a piece. Now it can be a piece if I have some students who are just love it, right? And they're like making videos and they're on there every day because it's in their unique ability, but it's not mine. And so, because also you're creating content. I'm in a cornfield sort of in central Illinois for everyone in my community. When like, if you do the math, if to get six figures, you've got 50 clients at $2,000. I need 50 people. So that's my marketing philosophy, is how can I get those 50 people? I don't need 20,000 followers or fans or whatever. I just want 50 really great people, or 100, or whatever that number is. And so I think it confuses people, because I do have the Joy of Marketing and we do Facebook ads and we do social media. But I have a massive team, right? And we invest a fortune in doing that. I don't want that for my studio, right? And then I have to have this giant staff. I've done multiple six figures, over six figures, almost every single year for 23 years, very easily. So I like to teach how to make money, but also put family first. Because that shoot and burn model, you're working all the time. And we have kids. And my twins just went to college. I'm going to get teary because they just left yesterday. I know it goes so fast. And I look back at that moment, literally, I have it frozen in my mind where I held them. They were preemies. So they were both in a hand, like a bowling ball. I got them palmed. And I said, I'm not going to work this 15 years away, which would be this time. And so my thing is learn and learning how to get those right clients. And let me talk about like what we do to do that, but not running around and chasing every, you know, oh, I need 1,000 Instagram followers and I need to be blogging and I need to be post. No, like if you guys look at any of my social media, it's all for photographers. It's not for my studio. So this like little quiet little thing that a lot of people don't even know about, except those, that small number of clients who loves us and gushes on us. Okay, so let's talk about what does that look like, Sarah? It's not ads. It's not SEO or Yelp or any kind of, like, I don't even get online inquiries. I make people get on the phone with me, right? Because it's sort of like people aren't problem aware. I know this is kind of a big concept, but when people hear of photographers, they just think we're like everyone else. Oh, it's a couple $100. You give me a CD. And so when people aren't looking for what we do as boutique photographers, a lot of times we have to educate them on like, how do you decorate your walls? I've literally asked people that. They're like, oh, I don't do photos. Well, okay, cool. I'm just curious, like, how do you decorate your walls? And they're like, oh my gosh, we have been fighting over that. We can't find any art we agree on. And then I start talking to them about, so like, this isn't the posed family photo. Like that's what I do. I don't do the posed family photo. Like picture your yummy, juicy little baby with those little fat cheeks and finger dimples, like giant, like the gap over, you know, in taking up a whole wall in their bedroom. That's what we do. And people are like, whoa, I love that idea. Or some people are like, oh, I'd never do that. That's fine. That's totally cool. But I think a big part of my overarching marketing philosophy and strategy is education, right? Getting out in the market, educating people, partnering with people who share my target audience, right? Because a lot of times there are price shoppers. We always say like the search customer is the worst customer because they're emailing every photographer in town. How many digital files do you sell me for $200, right? And they're like shopping. That's not a client who's ever going to be excited about what I do. I've got to go out and find those clients and make those clients and create those clients. And I know your listeners are probably like, oh, but Sarah, I'm introverted or I'm just shy or whatever. And I would say to them, look, I totally get it, right? You don't have to be Allie. You don't have to be me. You don't have to be it's not personality driven. It's about having systems and knowing what to say. Right? Like if you say, I'm not good at math, if I gave you the answers to the math test and you went in, you'd be like, oh, I got this. It's that you're trying to do something you don't know the answers to. You don't know how to do it.
So let's go. And I know there's so much here, but let's stop right here. And let's just really quickly get into the phone part. Because as you're saying this, as people are like, oh yeah, like, I'm an introvert. I don't even want to get on the phone. Yeah. And I know I was talking to a neighbor recently. We had kind of like, in the summer, recently for my social life is in the summer. And we were sitting around outside, you know, with the neighbors, like out in a yard spread out. And a neighbor who had just moved in was talking about an experience that he had had with a service provider recently. And he's like, I just could not get this person to call me on the phone. All they would do is text me. And it was really hard to do business. All I want to do is get on the phone. And so I know there are different philosophies, different ages feel different ways, but a lot of people are like, just not even, they're almost like afraid to get on the phone. And so talk about that. First of all, so do you, your contact information on your website, is it only a call or do they fill it out and then you call them? Start with just those basics.
Sure. They fill it out and we will call them. We will get them on the phone. But that's such a small part of how we add clients. But if someone does fill out that questionnaire, we go back to them with, oh my gosh, this is so exciting. We can't wait to talk to you. We have a couple questions and then we're happy to send you pricing. But this is really important. I want to make sure we're giving you the right pricing. And like, what's in it for them? Why should they talk to us? It'll just take a quick second. And then we actually have seven things we go through on the phone call. We call them the seven B's. But if, look, my philosophy is if someone, like, I want to work with people who want this custom artwork. Like, think if I were a fancy artist and I came to you, Allie, and I was like, I'm going to meet with you and I'm going to get to know your kids and I'm going to create a painting that represents your children. Wouldn't you want to meet with me and talk about it? Because you know you're going to have this beautiful piece of artwork for your room. So people just want scrapbook photos or they don't want to even talk to me, then we're probably not a good fit. And I get it from the photographer's perspective too. Like, it's so scary. Even for me, it's like, oh, I'm busy. The phone's ringing. That's why the first B in my 7 Bs is be optimistic, right? This person wants to give me money. This person's in pain right now. They're stuck at home fighting with their kids, homeschooling. I can help them, right? So I have to give myself that little pep talk and go, this is a friend and I can help them.
Okay, so let's talk about getting back into the marketing. I think, you know, you probably know, you probably hear a lot of the objections, the typical mindsets of, A, let's say, okay, my clients have always been buying digitals, they don't want the other stuff. B, oh, there's a million photographers in town and they are cheaper. Am I going to scare people away? Let's address some of those questions right off the bat so that we can immediately kind of brush those aside and say this is a different approach. So how would you answer those questions?
Yeah. So we kind of call that head trash, right? Like, we all have that head trash. Like, oh my gosh, the competitors are doing it. And our friends and family do it too. Like, oh honey, I love you. No one's going to pay that. Everyone wants digital files. You can't take that. You can't take that away. I did a whole episode. We call it front pocket, back pocket. Like, put your friends and family in your front pocket and don't ask them for business advice, guys. Put your community and your mentor in your back pocket. Just a little bonus tip there. Here's the thing. There's so many competitors when you are shoot and burn, when you're competing on price. You can never win the price race to the bottom because most businesses compete with cheap. But as photographers, we compete with free because everyone has a digital camera. So you're never going to be the cheapest ever because someone's going to do it for free. So when you're boutique, sort of like going from a fast food restaurant, and come on, I'm not saying people aren't good photographers because McDonald's French fries, like, can you get better?
yes. From,
exactly. A fast food restaurant where you look down the street, McDonald's, Hardee's, Arby's, Wendy's, Panera, there are 500 of them, to a sit down restaurant. So it's not just doing the same thing that all of your competitors are doing. It's a completely different model, right? A sit-down restaurant. Someone comes to your table, takes your order. They cook the food the way you want it. They finish it. They bring you dessert and they put frosting on the dessert, right? They print your artwork. They frame it. And when people say, oh, but they just want to do it themselves, if that were true, restaurants wouldn't be in business because we would all just want the ingredients cheaper, right? But we go to restaurants and we pay for a steak. Have you ever paid for really nice steak dinner and a really nice glass of wine and you leave and you're like $350 later? You could have bought those ingredients for maybe $30 at the grocery store, but you spent time by the fire with your family or your person and talking and laughing and you had such a great time. So that's where in the mind of the photographer and needing to educate the consumer that it's not the same thing. I don't do what they do. So the competitor thing, and my students really start to learn that pretty quickly, we just take it out of the conversation, right? If you're being driven by what you think your competitors are doing, I think that's to step back and say, okay, who really are my competitors? Because that's not what we do. I mean, sure, we're all competing. If people are hungry, they have a lot of choices. Everyone's your competitor. But at the end of the day, if we're creating a completely different business that serves the people who want that beautiful artwork to decorate their home, I think as photographers, we have a moral obligation to do that for them. I could get into like a really passionate conversation with anybody about why we don't serve the community by doing digital high-res digital files. We give our clients a digital file, a small one for social media, of anything they buy, but we don't serve them. Right? People are hurting. Teenagers. I have a high school senior right now whose whole year has been yanked out from under her, right? And her friends, they're suffering. I see it firsthand, right? And these kids can be given an experience and a beautiful keepsake that they'll have forever. We owe it to them. Same thing, blended families, right? You've got a mom with kids and a dad with kids and they have kids and you put that beautiful portrait on the wall of all the kids. It's healing. I believe what we do is healing. So hopefully that inspires people to stop focusing on competitors and really looking at how can we serve people better. That's what I want us to do as an industry.
Yeah, I think a couple of things on that. One, absolutely on the like the healing for photo shoots. I do a lot with them. I live near Michigan State University, and I got a couple of really nice notes when I did some photo shoots for some seniors who kind of like lost the end of their senior year. And their parents would write and say, you gave them just this little bit of normalcy back where they actually got to feel like they got to do one of these things. The other kind of quick point, I'll try not to get into too much of a like a market research tangent, but I taught a class at Michigan State. I also teach in the advertising department. So I have a similar background as you. And I taught a class on consumer research where we talk about kind of like intrinsic versus extrinsic values, where extrinsic are like the things that you're getting, like the physical things. And then, intrinsic. I got to get that right as I'm teaching it. And then extrinsic is, it's all these like other factors that come into play. It's like making you feel a different way. It's the way it makes you feel, basically. And I see that really come into play. And that's the kind of thing, like it's making your senior year more normal. It's these little things that just make the experience so much better. And so I don't know if this is a good segue, but my question for you is, I know in my business, a little part of me, I try to kind of see myself as like a bit of an interior designer instead of just a photographer. And do you feel that with your business too, that people kind of see you that way, or that you're almost marketing yourself that way? In the home space?
Yes, definitely. Because we frame things. And I think that's part of the reason we have high sales, because I help paint that picture of, oh my gosh, this would be amazing over your sofa, the kids jumping on the trampoline in a big canvas. And then this series here, we put in a thick, chunky wood frame, and it's down your hallway. And then in your master bedroom, like these snuggly ones of you and the kids, and black and white in a soft silver frame. So we're sort of decorating their house. And I know some photographers may say, but I don't know how to do that. Well, if you don't know how to do it, you think you're going to give it to your clients, a digital file, and they have to go print it and color correct it and manage exposure and then go work with some 20-year-old kid at Hobby Lobby picking a hunter green frame with carvings in it. No. Like, I think learn it. Sort of like the chef saying, I made this delicious pastry, but I don't know how to make the frosting. You know, so you go home and you get a nasty can and you kind of ruin the whole thing. So, I mean, maybe there's growth potential for you there, but it's a very big part, I think, of how we can serve our clients. So yes.
Do you have any tips for those who are feeling unsure about that part of it, how they can start to learn it, or some of the tools that they might look into to do that part?
Yeah, I think anytime you're feeling that fraud, imposter syndrome because of something you don't know, go learn it, right? Like, that's been my philosophy all along. Find out who's doing it and learn it. I learned framing because I outsourced my framing for years with a local framer, and she taught me. My clients would meet me there and I just learned. We teach that now. And I do framing internally now. We have a little frame shop, but we have a little fellow, retired older fella, who comes in and does it for us because it's hard. It's not fun. I don't love it, but it's so important. It's a part of the process. So it's something that can be learned. Don't sit and stew over, I'm not good enough, I don't know framing. Find someone who can teach you. Take classes. I'm sure there are so many resources out there. That's the good news. Once you identify that gap of where you need to be, there are so many resources, and a lot of even of free resources. And become a frame shopper. Look around your house. Are you framing things? Go find a really great framer and go experience what that's like to be, you know, served and taught what frame is appropriate. And it's not that hard to learn. It's just not.
Yeah. And, you know, just to kind of riff off of your earlier concept of getting creative in this time, if you're not able to legally work, let's say you have a studio and you're in a place like Michigan where right now you're shut down, isn't that a great opportunity to go back to your previous clients and offer them something? Because I've always said the reason that I got into offering products in the first place was because I had a longtime client. I had photographed their wedding. I photographed many things along the way. And I went to their home for a session once, and there was like one little 4x6 or 5x7 bedside photo from all of these sessions. She was like, oh, we love all the photos, but we just don't even know where to start. And I was like, light bulb moment, like, oh, this is a thing. So, you know, there's an idea right there that for me, even though my income, I mean, being completely honest, I think many of us saw our incomes drop in 2020, but because I was still selling products, that was really able to help me out in keeping a higher income coming in from the clients that I did have. So there's a great place to get started, just going back and making that offer.
And I think too, being that we're at the beginning of the year now, it's a slower time for most people in the photography space, right? People are nestled in. And I always tell people, you can always make more money, but you can't make more time, right? We're always saying, oh, I wish I had time to learn framing. I wish I had time to learn these new Photoshop skills. I wish I had time. Well, you know what? You have time now. So in 3-4 months, when, let's just be optimistic that the world is going, the clouds are going to part and the sky is going to open up, you'll have all of these new skills. So I always try to take January, February, March to fix and plan. Those are the two things I do right now. I fix things that are broken, whether it's physical things like my props and my lights and my lenses, or it's skills that I don't have, right? I need to go get that skill. And then as I plan my year, it's like, oh, I have framing now. I'm going to launch this to my new clients. Like, what's my plan to do that? Because, and then again, like you said, going back to past clients and having this new thing, your sales will go up. You'll make up for it. The worst thing that people can do is to just hide, right? And just be like, oh, I'm just going to, lay in, watch Netflix until this whole thing's over. We got to take advantage of the time. It's a gift to be given this time. It really is a gift.
I absolutely agree. And I even staggered out, like, the time around the holidays, I give myself permission to just do nothing, like hang out with family. January, I'm easing in. And for me, I start teaching my class. So I'm a little bit more busy with that. And then I kind of said, okay, in February, I'm going to really dive in. It's like quiet, I can get into it. And I love being able to do that. All right, I have one more question for you. And hopefully I'm not opening up a whole other can of worms, because I'm really trying to make this the last question. But when it comes to offering products to your clients, there is a lot of overwhelm going on. And so are you getting to know them and then offering specific products based on what they're looking for? Or do you, let's say, like, curate a really kind of smaller set of products in general? Basically, what I'm saying is, it's that whole like paradox of choice. If you have too many choices, you're going to get overwhelmed. If you go to a restaurant and you have a menu item with 40 pages, you're going to be like unhappy no matter what, because you are always missing out. Or if you go to a high-end restaurant that has a one-page menu, you're pretty happy with your choice. So how do you make sure that that experience is not too overwhelming for your clients?
Yes. So a big part of boutique, just like you said, is a very curated menu. We're not Cheesecake Factory.
That's exactly. Like, yes. I was like exactly thinking of the Cheesecake Factory.
Yes. I figured out what people buy. I shoot pretty. I'm not a really creative like shooter. I know what sells. I have a very tight product mix, but also I hold my clients' hands, because decision fatigue is a real thing. Right. So I created a 5-step system. So I'll go through it kind of fast so you can see. And it increases the sales so high just by serving people. I don't like the high pressure-y sales, but I sat down and I said, okay, if I'm creating this system for my very best friend, what would serve her? First phone call, we go through those 7 B's. That includes bringing up what makes us different. It brings up price. It brings up digital file, right? Everything they need to know to make a good decision. Then step two is I always do an in-person consultation. That's where I do a needs analysis. That's where I find out. I look at their walls. I figure out what would be good. And I draw some pictures in their mind like, ooh, what if we did this? Ooh, what if we did that? Then it's easy. Then step three is shoot to sell. I know what they're going to buy. I just go shoot it. So I don't have to overshoot. I shoot it. Step four is the in-person sales presentation, right? I present it to them. I sit and I hold their hand. And I remember rejecting that for so long, going, oh, that's so pushy. And finally, someone said, Sarah, you just do it and you'll see. And I did it. And the client gushed and thanked me and made her decision. And if they need to cut, I help them cut. But I'm not doing them a favor by sending them home with all these proofs like I used to do. People couldn't decide. I'd seen that. And I was like, they're telling me they love them. They're telling me they want them. Why aren't they ordering? Because my system didn't help them. So we know that 4th step, that in-person presentation, that's a whole thing. That's not boutique on its own. It's part of boutique. But it can't go longer than an hour. That decision fatigue sets in. Again, all the years of lessons, I learned these things. And then the fifth appointment, they show up, they get their artwork all beautifully packaged, and that's when we pick out their frames. And if they want, holiday cards or I call it knick-knack paddywhack. I don't sell that stuff up front, but if they want any extra things, that's when we do it. And by then we're like best friends. We built this relationship of trust. So when something goes wrong, they can come to me, they can call us. But really, they make a decision, right? The whole system is to help them make a decision. Even if it's 1 8x10, they've made a decision. And that feels good.
I like it. You know, I really like the pre-consult. And even if it's like virtual right now with COVID, like doing it on a phone, walking through, I just immediately thought of Joanna Gaines. And when she would walk through the house and be like, what if here we have this? And then like you see it in your head, you're like, yes, yes, I love this. Getting them excited about the possibilities in there, yes. I think is great for mindset in the very beginning instead of like, you know, down the line. But don't be discouraged. Like I said, even if you've given digital files and, you know, they haven't done anything with it, there's still a ton of opportunity to offer great products that they can't get, or that if you show them exactly what it's going to look like and they're like, yeah, I could go and do this myself, but I know you're going to do it and it's going to look just like this and it's going to be what I want. So there is definitely something to be said for that.
Yeah. I mean, even to text a client and say, oh my gosh, I came across your images and I just had the best idea. Could you do me a favor? Would you just run in your dining room and snap a picture of that wall? Maybe you've been there over your sofa and then flip and get me one over the mantle. I just had a really great idea of something, and you go and you put it in there and you send it back and go, hey, I just was realizing, you know, you never printed anything. I know it's an investment, but I think this would give you goosebumps every day when you look at it. And sure, they could say, oh, I'm just going to go do it myself. But most people, like if someone came to me and said, Sarah, I've got an idea for a great meal. I want to serve it to you and your husband. And here's the cost. I'd be like, yeah, like I don't have to do it. You'll do it for me. That's awesome. So I love that idea, Allie. Everybody can go do that. That's such a good pivot for COVID, like COVID pivot.
And it builds the relationship that much more. And I've found that the people who I've done those personalized meetings with, you know, they're the ones who come back and they are very loyal because they've gotten to know you as a person and enjoy your time together. Awesome. Okay. Sarah, I mean, I could turn this into like our own little podcast if we could just go on and on like a whole month long series, but I know you have things to do. So let's get on with, you have amazing resources. You have some kind of cool stuff coming up. So go ahead and share those resources with the listeners so that they can find them.
I agree, Allie. I think we can be best friends now.
Definitely.
Well, this could be, you're like, all my podcasts are this length except Sarah Petty, and it was 2.5 days.
You're like, why can't this upload because the file is too big?
People are like, pause it and come back tomorrow. Yeah. So we, you know, I've dedicated my life to helping photographers. And one of the things we did last year for the first time, because we realized there wasn't a place for boutique photographers to be together, is we had an in-person event, and it was amazing. And we're doing it again this year, but because of COVID, we're going to do it virtually, which is kind of cool. You get a front row seat. We're sending people this giant box of activities. So it's not just speakers like speaking, it's me mostly, but it's activities and it's showing you, we're doing a pricing activity. We're picking products like for your, anybody who's listening, who's like, oh, that boutique model really appeals to me. I'm going to give 3 scholarships to your listeners.
Awesome.
So let me give you a website. It's a $495 ticket. And they can apply at goboutiquelive.com/scholarship. And I know you'll put that in the notes, but
yep, that'll be in the show notes.
Yep. Go Boutique Live is the name of the conference. And it's just, we hired Tony Robbins, event planner. I'm going to be on a stage where I can see everybody. And we've got physical activities. We're doing breakouts. Like, it'll just be a really good sense of community, because I've learned over the years, like, it's really hard to be alone and run a business. So it's really like, I feel like you'll be there and be like, my people.
Yes, that energy. Oh my gosh, especially right now. I think you're so creative. I love your ideas here.
Oh, thanks. And thank you so much for having me. This was really fun. And like I said, I love what you're doing for the industry. It's so important for people to be able to have those voices that they can listen to, that just remind them this is worth doing. We always say that it's worth getting good at, right? Anything worth doing is worth being bad long enough till you can get good.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, so everybody check out the show notes for that link. I'll also put some other links where people can find you if they want to explore a little bit more of all of the amazing resources that you have, all the things that you're up to. But Sarah, just thank you for sharing your energy, your creative ideas, and your experiences with us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening. Check out show notes at photofieldnotes.com. And if you loved this episode, leave your review on iTunes. See you next week.